Good morning, everybody. Gorgeous day it is. Yesterday struck me as reminiscent of what today in Oregon State sports history reminds me of. Yesterday, September 16th, 2025, a date which will live in weather history. I mean, I don't know how hot it got where you were, but on September 17th of 2003, as I'm sure you all recall, for whatever reason, that date has stuck in my mind because of two things. September 17th, 22 years ago today, it was like 95, 96 degrees during the day on Saturday. Our daughters had soccer going on. Paul Christ, the offensive coordinator for Coach Riley that day when they came back together in 2003. And so Paul Christ and I saw each other out at the soccer fields going, man, I remember saying to Paul, man, I'm glad you're not playing right now, because there was soccer going on in the late morning, early afternoon. Paul was out there with the Beavers ready to play Arizona State that night.
Oh, I remember that, yeah.
Hot.
Yeah.
I mean, mid-90s hot. Now, yesterday was like 91 or 92, but right around the same time frame. A reminder that summer sometimes can go out kicking and screaming. We're heading down the stretch, and yesterday we had sort of a real summer-like day. It was a beautiful, hot day. Things are cooling today, and I heard the word rain or showers by Saturday. Is that accurate, John?
Not
for the rivalry game.
Not okay. My forecast.
Well,
no.
I heard that on a station, a Portland station, and I know our weather isn't always the same as Portland, but if they're talking about showers in Portland Saturday, it got me thinking it might happen down here in the valley too. So I hope you enjoyed yesterday, and today is the 22nd anniversary.
Well,
not only of mid-90s here, but the Beavers 45, Arizona State 17
in a
night game that night.
I'll never forget that, because Dougie and I were doing the tailgate show out from Parker Plaza. This was before we moved to the Hilton Garden Inn, and it was so hot. It was close to 100, and I remember seeing Sun Devil fans milling about and just thinking, what are they thinking? You know, they think they're going to go to Oregon in the rain, leave the Phoenix 110
right.
degrees. And here they are walking around, and it was close to 100 degrees. I'll never forget that.
Right.
I'll always remember it was Arizona State. I don't remember the game.
Mm-hmm. Great win for the Beavers. Yeah. A dominant win, 45-17 on the fast.
And then what was that last thing you said? I had a point on that, too.
Well, Paul Christ.
Paul
Christ,
hot day, soccer.
Hot day, soccer. The rain.
Oh, the rain. So
possible rain.
Yeah,
Saturday.
On Sunday, when we came home from Utah, you right. were in Lubbock or coming home right. from Lubbock. Sunday up in Portland, it was pouring down
mm-hmm.
rain.
Mm-hmm.
By the time we got to the Mid-Valley, it was like this.
Okay. So what is being called for Saturday in the Valley here and down the road?
Partly to mostly sunny.
Really?
From
okay.
what I have.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's fine.
And about 80.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm not sure what the Joker was talking about that I was listening to yesterday, driving around listening to talk, I think, maybe a little about NFL quarterbacks. Hey, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Joe Beaver Show. What's the...
phone. I was talking about a different thing I use in the morning. My phone says Saturday, no clouds, 77.
Okay. I like that better.
Yeah,
me
too.
I live with that.
Yeah.
Even though, on a certain level, Saturday noon down the road, I think you feel it, I feel it, maybe our fans... And we can take texts and calls from it yesterday, the day before. I mean, we're getting a real sense of, as callers and texters have said to us, throughout our lives, our shared lives, in the rivalry series, the Civil War series over the years, this was one of the biggest weeks in our lives, right, John? I mean, you'd line up on both sides, there'd be arguments, there'd be office chatter, there'd be bets, there would be hostilities, there would be a lot of fun, there would be shared joint media luncheons, etc. There would be pranks. You know, my daughter is a caregiver in Eugene, and my wife and I went down and walked around Skinner's Butte with her. She loves to hike, and we went, you know, a short hike up Skinner's Butte.
Mm-hmm.
And there I saw for the first time in probably 40, 45 years, the O that's on Skinner's Butte. You can no longer see it, the tree growth, but there's an O there. And I remember reading about Oregon State college students coming down and painting the O orange. Back in those good old days where the game meant everything.
Yeah, yeah.
the Civil War rivalry was just an amazing one. Kidnappings, you know, all these things have been written about, brawls, the game canceled because of a brawl and a riot, and the game moved here to Albany because of it.
Yeah.
This week, right now, the game down the road, September 20th, 2025, has less of a sense of buildup and buzz than I've ever felt.
Ever.
Ever.
Yeah.
Now, we're asking some of you today if you want to contribute and call, share thoughts along those lines, whatever your thoughts are about this game this weekend, its place in your history as a fan, maybe of both programs. You know, you may be one of those, and I know that it's difficult. We had Merle yesterday beginning to teeter on the, yeah, I'm kind of interested in the game they have next week. What? You know, I mean, that was just, I almost fell off my stool here within the studios of 1240 Joe Radio. But wherever you come into this thing, your short history with it, long history, this week, it just doesn't. Last week was different, but it still felt like there was some cachet to it because they were continuing the series and the Beavers had won the last time they played at Reser.
Yeah.
They had won the previous time they'd played at Reser at a 2-game winning streak at Reser going into last year's game. That's not that long ago, and yet now that just feels utterly different, like a different world in lifetime. And it was a different world. It was a different world altogether.
Yeah.
The wins in 20 and 22, members of the same conference.
Right.
Even going down in 23, that's unfortunately when the news began to get out there about Jonathan and Michigan State, and that took a lot of luster and dampened, without question. It divided the attention of the Beavers and the players and took some luster away from that game and that event in that time. And the Beavers, you know, played competitively enough, but I think the whole feel would have been different. Two things. Had they somehow made one more play against Washington and won that game going in as a top 10 team,
right,
and that the conference wasn't falling apart, you weren't about to lose your head coach, I think that 23 game would have been very competitive and the Beavers would have had a chance to win it.
Yeah, the only thing about last year's game that was different was that it was out of season. It wasn't during Thanksgiving. Everything else, though, still felt like it was the rivalry. And I know this sounds as macabre as it can be, but I liken it to a divorce. I'm leaving you, but I'm not moving out for another 3 weeks. Trust me, I know. Yeah. I know what that means.
Yes,
so and it's like, okay, but we're here. We're together. We should make this work, but you're going to go. Oh, and by the way, I'll make Thanksgiving dinner too. Oh, okay. And that's honestly exactly how that game felt down in Eugene. Because he was leaving, you just knew it, and then the conferences were separating. And even though it hadn't done yet, we knew that there was going to be games, probably be games, but they wouldn't be, I think it was being floated at that time, they wouldn't be at, you know, in that part of the season.
Right.
So last year, it was just kind of a half shock, like, wow, I'm in shock.
It's weird playing the game
over 100 years, and this, what's going, okay, all right, we'll play him, and then the game. This year, completely different. The money disparity, the conference, after a full year being an independent for us and being a Big Ten team for them, then it's more real. The separation is more
it
real.
It does feel more so. And the disparate starts for both teams.
Right.
If the Beavers were 3-0 going down there, I think the mood and feel around here would be different.
Yeah.
But the Beavers aren't. And so I'm just wondering, again, it's sort of yesterday we were asking to kind of gauge where you are as a longtime fan. And we heard from a number of you yesterday, and I think there's some texts we didn't get to yesterday, which we want to.
So new ones.
We want to kind of get into that, just sort of gauge how you're feeling, kind of, you know, check the temperature for Beaver Nation heading into this game and beyond, you know. Whatever unfolds Saturday, I still come down to the idea that the Beavs have a chance to do some good things on the back end here and salvage some wins and make a run at a bowl game. I still believe it's possible. The schedule, by not getting that Fresno State game, by being defeated by a Cal team that looks to be a lot better than people had anticipated. But the loss to Fresno State is sort of what makes the angst and the worry and the frustration much higher. Had you made one more defensive play in that game, gotten the stop, maybe one last bad snap, you win the game. And even though you still had a lot of issues in that game and in the first game and in the subsequent game against Texas Tech, your overall mood and attitude much different and much better. But you didn't, so you are 0-3. I get it. So today, John, let's get a little more sampling from our listeners who are kind enough to text us in on the University Honda text line or give us a call. The lay of the land, again, is similar to yesterday in that we'll have one guest, maybe two. I'm waiting on another. But we will have a member of the Oregon State volleyball team. Lauren Rummel will join us. Yesterday, we had the pleasure of visiting with an Oregon State soccer player for the first time, Carly Carrer. We had her on. Today, we'll check in with the volleyball program with one of their top players and a great weekend for Lauren Rummel. She'll join us around 12:25. But for the most part, today, open phones and texts. I reached out to Jovan Stevenson, the head football coach at Crescent Valley High School, hoping to hear back from him. We've been giving a lot of love of late to Corvallis High School with the Donnie Reynolds ceremonial last weekend and with Danny Havel talking about having Donnie on the air, et cetera. So in the interest of balance within our community, we would love to have Jovan, who I did not know. That was a piece of news that eluded me. But Jovan Stevenson is the head football coach at Crescent Valley High School, and Dwight Roberson II, who's been a guest on this show a couple of times, the head coach at CHS, and a really good story by Dylan Jacobs yesterday, highlighting that fact, highlighting the fact that we're friends, roommates, teammates, and now coaching in this same town. Yeah. They came
against each other.
Yeah, and they came from a long way away to become Beavers and have stayed. Jovan, I've reached out to. He's the head coach at CV, and we hope to hear from him, if not today, maybe Friday. I've also continued to reach out to Chad Paulson. Now, Chad last week was sort of, if you want me, I'm not sure I can add anything, but we want to revisit a time when the Beavers had one of their great wins in the Civil War rivalry in 91 with a guy that was a key player in that game. Chad Paulson, out of Bend, came to Oregon State, still lives in the Portland area, a lifelong Beaver, and kind of want to get his feel about that win and the practicing, what the seniors, and he was a senior on that team, being carried off the field.
Yeah.
Practicing that all week and how all in the Beavers were on that in that week and even that season. Jim Wilson has it on pretty good authority that the Beavers were practicing stuff for the Civil War game. When they were getting ready to play Washington, they would have an Oregon period. Okay, here's stuff we're going to do in 8 weeks, in 7 weeks, in 6 weeks. Tommy Prothro used to do a little of that, too.
Yeah, I thought we'd heard about that from bygone eras where they actually
That's
did that.
That's how big the game was, has been, in the fabric of our lives. So I'm asking you, longtime Beaver believers, you know, yesterday a caller or two took issue with Oregon's uniform choice. They're going to wear black. I mean, back in the day, Tommy Prothro also had the Black Bandits of Benton County arraying his players in black. I mean, uniform colors and choices have long been an issue in the rivalry, so that's nothing new. But everything does feel utterly new and different and not good.
No.
So I'm just wondering where you all are, 541-497-5356. Also, if not today, then maybe Friday. Now, Friday, we're going to be coming to you from Tim Uwis's parking lot right across the street from his Edward Jones Tim Uwis office. Please mark this down. We're not going to be on the air tomorrow with the show. Cal Raleigh and the Seattle Mariners. Tomorrow will usurp these airwaves. They've won 10 straight, have the Mariners. They have a matinee affair tomorrow. We'll have it from Kansas City. So tomorrow, no Joe Beaver show. So the next time we get together after today will be Friday at Edward Jones' Tim Uwis at 545 2nd Street in downtown Corvallis in the parking lot, just a little south of his office, kind of heading towards the basketball courts and the dog park and the skate park, that big parking lot there along the river. Tim will be flipping burgers. We'll have hot dogs. free barbecue lunch and all the trimmings. We'll have tickets to give away to Beaver football games, volleyball tickets, a three-game pack of bowling, rounds of golf from Spring Hill Country Club. That'll all take place at Edward Jones, Tim Uwis's office. Edward Jones believes that financial success is for everyone. And that's a good theme about what I'm about to say. So please come join us Friday between 11 and 1, Tim Uwis's annual hosting of the Joe Beaver Roadshow.
Now, you'll remember last year it was pouring down
rain. It did
rain.
Pour rain.
We still had a great time.
Yes, we did, and a lot of people showed.
Yeah, and tomorrow it's going to be glorious.
And Friday will be very nice.
Or Friday,
yeah,
sorry.
And Thursday, tomorrow, the Mariners. Now, we're going to take a break here in a moment. We have open phones if you'd like to join us, and we will take your calls after the break. Any texts you may have, we'll get to some texts that you may have sent yesterday and try to catch up. We appreciate your interaction and support of the show. We're going to take a quick break and come back and talk a little bit about financial success for everyone. That's kind of a slogan for Tim and what he's attempting to do in his life and working with you as your financial advisor. Financial success for everyone, says Cody Campbell and the Saving College Sports team. It's become an interesting story in that yesterday The Athletic did a long piece written by Ralph Russo and Chris Vanini on what is this whole thing, the SCORE Act, the Saving College Sports sort of in. It's like two different things going on, and Saving College Sports is saying the SCORE Act doesn't work as it's now written. It doesn't help save college sports. On certain levels it does, but on others, according to Cody Campbell, it doesn't. You have a bipartisan effort, Republicans and Democrats lining up on this thing here in the Pacific Northwest. Tumwater may have some thoughts about that when he joins us after the break, but I have finally, and Alan Thayer is also doing a deep dive on it, and he may join us next week to discover and share with us from his own mind what he's discovered about, okay, what are the merits of these various acts, the SCORE Act, Saving College Sports' campaign, what's going on with all of that. I kind of like what Cody Campbell's up to just based on the rhetoric that I'm hearing. And what Cody's trying to say is, and he wrote a tweet the other day, calling out Greg Sankey and the Big Ten commissioners, that Tony Petitti, just saying, you guys are bullying us. You are destroying by your greed, and you're going to leave everybody else in your wake. We have a plan. Our plan gives a greater distribution of media revenues, an overturning of a 1961 NCAA Broadcasting Act. I'm still kind of learning about all of that and what the upshot of it is. But I'm just saying here today that I kind of like what Cody Campbell's up to. I think it benefits us more than the SCORE Act that's been proposed the way it's written. The SCORE Act isn't bad in idea, according to many, but it's written in such a language that it may not provide the kind of help and relief that Iowa State, Washington State, Oregon State, and 97 other schools could benefit from.
Right, right.
So let's break. Tumwater and Ben in Beaverton. Guys, hang on. We'll take a quick break, get to open phones and your thoughts next on The Joe Beaver Show.
Welcome back to The Joe Beaver Show. If you can hear me, John got it right this time. Let's give him a hand.
Well, he did. He gets it right most of the time. We're all trying, as Robert Urich said eloquently in Lonesome Dove, just trying to make my way through the territory.
He turned to be a bad guy.
He did. He was just trying to make his way through the territory. You can do that either with integrity or not. And he kind of fell in with some bad folk.
Bad dudes. And
bad company corrupts good morals. And his...
He thought about it a long time.
He thought, but he ended up going with the bad guys, and Duvall and Tommy Lee had to do the right thing later.
They did.
Okay, now, Ben in Beaverton, kind enough to join us on the Downward Dog phone line with Tummy as Tummy.
You know, that's in homage to
Merle. Tummy about eight times yesterday. We'll go to Tumwater in a moment, ask Dave what he thought of the new nickname. Ben in Beaverton, thank you for the call. Good morning.
Hey, guys. I wanted to touch on the Oregon game, but two things real quick before that. One, as ridiculous as this sounds, I almost feel like this season might be a little different if that 12th man call never happened on against Cal.
I agree.
It just seems like it's just set a bad mojo
that
we haven't got out of yet.
Totally.
Secondly, I was catching up on the show yesterday, and Dave and Tumwater, who is a tremendous caller, but he was comparing Wayne with Trent Bray. And said, you know, Wayne's only had one good season. I would just like to counter that, saying that, first of all, breaking a 25-year streak of not going to the NCAA tournament.
Right.
That was certainly a good year beyond just the Elite Eight. I think last year was a good year that got away from them a bit. Mm-hmm. Largely, I think things kind of out of their control in terms of players finding new destinations. And then there was also the year that got cut short with the COVID season where they beat Utah, where they were at least going to go to the NIT.
They were going to host the NIT. Jared Lucas had hit the three out of the corner to beat Utah. They were going to play Oregon the next day when the world stopped. But you're right, that was a good year, and they were playing really well down the stretch. They've had other 17, 18 type years that in the long arc in history of Oregon State basketball and in this 21st century, Wayne's record is far better than I think he gets credited for sometimes. The two trips, the Elite Eight run, I mean, it had been a long time since those types of things had happened here.
Yeah, so I think, there's more of a history there. Just wanted to state that. So going to the, about the Oregon game, so just let me give you a little bit of history of kind of my fandom with Oregon State. When people ask me about Oregon State and stuff, the best story I can tell them is I can remember being, probably 9 or 10 years old. I was at a friend's birthday party, and they had just gotten the Super Mario 3 for the Nintendo system. And I was making them take breaks during that game, during playing the video game, to turn to what was Channel 12 here up in the Portland area, so I could check on the Oregon State-Washington basketball game score.
Nice.
And that would have been Gary Payton's maybe junior or senior year. Mm-hmm. So, this is something I really care about. And I went through, so playing Oregon, first of all, when we talk about, Trent came in there talking about the college football playoff is not something that, that couldn't happen here.
Right.
If you're going to play Oregon, which most likely, although not guaranteed, you would mark down on a schedule game as a loss. At that point, your runway for making the college football playoffs really doesn't have any room for error.
Mm-hmm.
You probably need to go 11-1 at that point if your loss is to Oregon. So that's just from a bigger picture perspective, kind of how you play. The easiest way to get to the college football playoffs is to go 12-0.
That's real easy to do.
Having a game that you're going to be a significant underdog in, at least under the current circumstances and environment, doesn't really leave you much margin for error moving forward.
Yeah.
Secondly, if we're doing this because OSU needs the financial resources of this game, I just kind of mapped out here in general. I think I'm being generous with some of these numbers. If I have 25,000 tickets sold, which accounts for the student population out of that, there's media, sponsors, all that. If 25,000 tickets are sold at $100, that's $2.5 million in ticket sales. I also just estimate of the 35,000 in attendance, if they all spent $20 on concessions, which again is probably a high estimate, I'm at $3.2 million for that game before whatever the costs are to run that event. If you then assume that whatever Oregon State's paying Oregon to come to Corvallis, they're getting the same on the other side, that nets out to zero. So of that $3.2 million, you could go, I was looking up for 2024, I'm seeing about $1.9 million that Texas, a Wisconsin, and Alabama was playing to host a home game.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that those conferences may be moving or are moving to 9 games. So maybe those opportunities are not as plentiful as they were before. But if this is a pure money-driven decision, it seems to me you would get more money scheduling 2 road games because that $3.2 million really is for two games, because you're going to go back to Eugene. You're going to get a fee for traveling there that's probably offset by what you paid Oregon to come here. So I would, you know, someone asked me, would you rather go and lose to Texas than lose to Oregon? And in my answer is yes. What the environment that's been created now, to me, is just not a fun environment going into a game knowing there is very little chance of waiting.
Hey, Ben,
not a fair competition.
Yeah, Ben, you've made a very I'm not going to go Fred Gwynn and my cousin Vinny. You've made a very astute, you study, overruled. No, I'm not going to do that. But Ben, I am going to ask you this. Very, you obviously taken great thought and some pains, and you've articulated, I think, some really good things. But I do have this question. If you're worried about playing Oregon because you want to make the college football playoff and you think in most years that's going to be a loss, if you schedule two road games that where you go get paid but probably lose, so where do you come out on balancing those things when you argue against playing Oregon because you might lose to them big or whatever? But now you're also saying, well, go to Texas, go to Ohio State and get paid, but you know you'll also probably lose those too.
Right. So ideally you would play none of these scenarios in my mind. If it's purely to present the best opportunity to make the college football playoffs, you would not play Oregon, and you would not go to a Texas, Alabama, et cetera. Mm-hmm. If the financial reality is that they need this revenue, I'm much more a proponent of what they did with BYU.
Yeah,
game, I at least feel like, I mean, who knows what 2027 looks like.
Mm-hmm.
I at least go into that game, you know, on paper, like, okay, certainly BYU is probably the favorite in that game. They'll have more fans in the stands. But that at least is something that feels more like a fair competition and just what's set up now, is it? So ideally, they would do none of these games. And they would schedule, you know, home and homes with teams that are of comparable ability.
Mm-hmm.
And you see how that plays out. But if, in fact, the financials are at a point where you have to get large guaranteed games, I would rather not be have that thrown in my face and lose to Oregon.
Yeah.
I'd rather take my shot at a Texas or Wisconsin or Alabama or whomever that could be. To me, it's, you know, it's never been a level playing field, Mike and John, but this is so unlevel of a playing field that to me it's no longer fun. It's just aggravating. And I think given where Oregon State at, there's a decent percentage of the fan base that I hope Scott is not ignoring that doesn't want to play this game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I know that's true.
It's not something that to me makes sense right now, other than financially. If it is financially driven, there are other ways to get to that number that don't involve Oregon.
Ben, it's a great call. Very thoughtful. I appreciate it. Thank you for making the call. Hope to hear from you again down the road on the show. Thanks, Ben.
Thanks, guys.
Before you go to Dave, what did you want to know? Because I got the schedule in front of me.
The BYU series, the home and home.
Oh, 27 on the road, 28
in Vegas.
Yeah,
that's what I thought. He said 27. I just wanted to clarify that I thought in my mind it was 28 at Allegiant, 27 in Provo, and then our home game is in Vegas. Let's go to Dave in Tumwater. Dave, I don't know if you liked what Merle said seven or eight times and referring to you. We're still going to call you Tumwater, but were you okay with it or not so much what Merle gave you in terms of a nickname yesterday?
Well, how do you spell?
Yeah, how do you say it phonetically? Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay, good answer.
I was nonplussed because I think you need to ask him to clarify his intention as to whether that was meant in the spirit of jocularity or mocking scorn. So that's a question you need to put to him, and because I'll demur until you get that clarification.
Thank you.
But I did want to respond to his call, the substance of his call. 3 points, and then I want to expand and amplify on the Civil War, perpetuation of the Civil War question you just took up with Ben. So first, I was glad that Merle agreed with me that it's way too premature for anyone to be considering the termination of the contract of Coach Bray. So that's good. Second, point B, I think Merle misunderstood what I was saying about Coach Tinkle, although, again, the previous caller also took exception to it. I'm not making a judgment, really, because I don't follow basketball mm-hmm. that closely, mm-hmm. as to whether Wayne Tinkle is a good coach or not. What I was commenting on is that he's a good man because he came to the protection
yes, yes.
of someone who was being persecuted
yep.
by hooligans and thugs. And so, and that's the more important mm-hmm. characterization, that he's a good man
yes.
rather than a good coach. I'm happy to yield to Ben and to Merle and others as to whether he's a good coach or not. Again, I'm not making a judgment on my only judgment I was making. At best, he has a mixed record as
right,
a coach
right.
oh, okay. of 10 to 15 years duration, and I don't see a groundswell of commentary in social media that Coach Tinkle ought to be let go, but there's all too much of it relative to Coach Bray. And I just do want to add one other thing. I know you guys always get a little queasy when I go down the criticism of your peers in media, but what Bill Orm did, I mean, let's just call it, it's a pathetic attempt of someone who's in an endangered industry to get clicks. And in order to save his career and his industry, he posts something that's clearly intended to be inflammatory, probably worked. He got a lot of clicks. And so the higher-ups in the Oregon, whatever the corporate entity that owns that publication, is probably happy. It's the same reason. And thankfully, I've forgotten the name of the reporter for the Oregonian who pilloried Luke Heimlich. Although I do know this, he's not in journalism anymore. I think he's a flack for some politician, which speaks volumes in itself. But it's the same thing that happened with Mike Leach at his end days. There was a guy in the Spokane paper, same dynamic, dying industry. They need attention. How can I get attention? Go after a coach. And so Trent Bray is getting the Mike Leach treatment that he got from that reporter in Spokane. But I digress, because my main argument with Merle is when he referred to my Pac-12 delusion, because he's calling for a kiss and make up with the Mountain West.
Right.
I've covered this before. Brooks Hatch, it was good to hear from him yesterday. Brooks has made this point before. I'll go over it again. There was every financial incentive imaginable for Oregon State and Washington State to go the path they did.
Yes.
Because if they just folded into the Mountain West, the assets of the old conference get split 12 ways
yes.
rather than two ways.
Right.
I mean, I don't know why that's hard
right.
to understand,
yeah.
but they had every conceivable financial incentive to perpetuate the Pac-12
yes.
brand. I can't do any better at explaining that, but as you yourself pointed out, Mike, yesterday, the new Pac-12 is going to be one of the top basketball conferences in the country with Gonzaga's addition. I mean, even from my remove as a basketball fan,
right.
I can see that makes sense. So lastly, the perpetuation of the Civil War. Need to take a breath. So we're one and a third seasons into the new Big Ten, the 18 schools. And it's clear, it's already clear, who the top four programs in that conference are. They're Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, and for better or for worse, it's the University of Oregon. We can also see quite clearly who the bottom six in that conference are. Purdue, Indiana, Northwestern, Maryland, Rutgers, and UCLA. They're the bottom six. And then, and the other 8, 10, whatever the number is never very good at math. That's the unwashed middle. That's where the University of Washington and SC are going to find themselves. So here's my point in going through that typology. If any Oregon State fan had the expectation or could look forward to Ohio State or Michigan or Penn State coming to Corvallis every other year, would they not find that to be a positive thing? Of course they would. The visibility of Oregon playing routinely against Oregon State every other year in Corvallis is of immense marketing and promotional value and financial value, as, again, the previous caller indicated. Now, I have the advantage of not being an alum of Oregon mm-hmm. State University. Mm-hmm. I think I can look at this a little more dispassionately.
Yeah.
Too many of the people calling in, they got their egos wrapped up in this. They got their feelings hurt, and that's I feel bad for them. But from a business point of view, it makes complete sense. I'm glad Scott Barnes intimated yesterday with John Canzano that the Civil War is going to continue after a 1-year hiatus. Mm-hmm. So that's what I have to say regarding in regard to old business from yesterday's call.
Okay,
I look forward to
thank
hearing
you.
What
one thing one,
others might have.
Thank you, Dave. Good talking to
one
you.
One thing on what Dave just said, though, and it's not a big deal, but yes, everybody would be excited to see Ohio State or Penn State run down the ramp or come out of the new tunnel, but if that's the case, then you're in the conference with them.
Well,
so you're getting the same amount of money that they're getting in theory, in the non-conference thing to keep Oregon coming because they're big and everything. You got to pay them now, number one. And number two, you're not in the conference. They're making all the money and you're not. And it isn't a close deal. They're making $100. You're making $1.
There's a lot at play in that, in what Dave just talked about, and we don't have time to go point by point. I do want to say before we get to Doug in Salem, we have another break coming. We've got one guest next hour, and we'll continue in open phones, and we'll get to some texts too. And I kind of want to take up a little bit on the Athletic story about Saving College Sports and Cody Campbell and the little war going on now between two different ideas about what's best for college sports going forward. I still need to learn a lot more and read a lot more and talk to more people, clearly. But what Cody said about trying to save college sports resonates a bit more with me, and we'll talk about that as we go, if not today, in the days ahead. But the one thing I do want to say about Bill Orem is, Dave has a very strong and just great distaste for what he felt was kind of a cheap shot and trying to get clicks. I know Bill.
A hatchet piece.
I know Bill. And like Bill a lot, and I don't think that, Dave, I will just say, I can't characterize what he wrote just from a personal standpoint of knowing and liking and respecting him as a journalist. I don't think, Scott was pretty clear with John yesterday that whatever Bill intimated or what Scott ought to do or that there should be, Scott put a stop to that and said, Trent's our guy. He just got off the phone with him. He said, we're going to fight through this together, and we're going to go forward. We believe in him. He's our guy. All of the things that Dave and others have articulated, Scott certainly confirmed in his conversation on the record about that yesterday. But I would never attribute to Bill this idea that I think I'm going to get some clicks and readers and stir something up and write this somewhat out there take. He is a little bit. I would say he's put himself what he wrote. You're not seeing a great deal of. I think you see little hints and intimations here and there, even from Canzano and Wilner and so on, saying, what's going on there? Should they consider a change and all that kind of thing? And what's it going to take to, how bad does it have to get if you do make a change? John has written things along those lines in his Bald-Faced Truth column and Mailbag Answers and all of that, and we've all seen it. But Bill Orem is a good journalist, and I don't think was just simply, I'm going to enter this fray and take a hot take and put myself out there. I know him enough to know that I feel like it was coming from a place that he felt like he thinks in the long run, maybe not now, maybe it was a little strong to say now, today, immediately.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think he thinks it's moving in that direction. And if you think it is, and if you know it is, then you get out in front of it. I'm not trying to take up for Bill and say that I agree with him. I don't. But I don't want to attribute to him I'm just looking for clicks and trying to save my dying newspaper by being a controversial sort of guy. I don't attribute that to him at all.
I was just going to comment when Dave said that, and again, I'm not taking up for writers or anybody in our business. I don't care. But it seems like that kind of writing goes back 100 years. 61. Just watch the movie 61.
Yeah.
Those guys were going after the Yankees, going after Roger Maris, constantly in their battling art items and line items and articles and columns, I should say. I mean, it was just brutal. And you know, big city media, that's what they do in big city media.
Yeah. So anyhow, I know we can all read that column and take, you know, I mean, and draw our own conclusions or have our own opinion. And Dave has a strong one against Bill Lorem for it. But again, Dave, I think, you know, maybe I have the advantage or disadvantage, or however you want to view it, of having interacted with Bill and known him for quite a few years and like and respect him. So that colors, that does kind of color my my reaction to seeing that piece. Yeah. It was strong, and he is kind of alone on it in just calling out directly for what he did. But I don't think it was coming necessarily from, I'm going to get a lot of attention. Watch this. Read this. Watch what I do next. I don't think that is what motivated him. I think he articulated from his own mind, looking at the situation, his argument, and he made it. And, you know, we'll leave it at that. Let's go to Doug on the Downward Dog phone line in Salem. Doug, good morning.
Thank you very much. I kind of have bad news. Oregon State is in the bottom 10 now. They're ranked number 7 in the bottom 10. We're not as bad as Notre Dame. They're ranked number 5. and so we're...
Good company.
And so we... And UCLA is in there, too.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's interesting that we were both playing each other in the Sun Bowl just a couple of years ago. And
yes.
I've been listening to the Portland area sports talk things, and they made the point you made just a few minutes ago that it was only 2 years ago that we were ranked number 10, and we took on Washington at ranked number 5 in Corvallis, and we lost to them only by 2 points.
Right.
So that was pretty good, but now we're, you know, now we're in the bottom 10, so it's kind of a downfall, you know. So and meanwhile I don't know where I'm gonna watch the game. It's on a lot of places my sports bars don't have the Big Ten network, and so we don't even, I hope they have on something besides the Big Ten, like maybe Channel 12 or 8 or something like that, you know. So.
Well, they don't. It's the Big Ten Network, Doug. So you got to, if you want to watch it, you got to find a place to do it.
Okay, I'll work on that for next 4 or 5 days. Okay. But we're back there in the bottom 10, and we'll be there a while for, you know, until the Houston game, but I watched Houston play, you know, 2 weeks ago, and they're a good team.
They are.
They're deep, and they're good. I mean, they're, you know, from Texas, and they got a lot of football players in the state of Texas, so.
Yes. No, and Doug, so, you're right. No, Houston, the Houston game becomes, I'm not going to lay, it's the biggest game in the history of the program. No, it's not. But it's an important game. Whatever unfolds Saturday in Eugene, and if it goes according to what people expect, then the game Friday gives you the opportunity next week to come home. And it, for me, Doug, every week is a season in a sense. I think a book was written along those lines. Everybody will be all in the Oregon State camp and program to win that football game and play their best game of the year and find a way to win and begin to kind of reverse whatever it is that's gone on through these first few weeks and what could unfold Saturday and go, man, go into a strong finish. And I think that's doable. It's possible. So next Friday is going to be a huge one, but you're right. Houston is good and maybe better than advertised.
Yeah, it's the season just... The opponents get, you know, beatable after that. You know,
that's true.
I'm afraid my 10-2 season's gone.
Well,
so
it is.
We're not going to make the playoffs.
No,
so I'm heartbroken about that. You know, so.
Doug, thank you for hanging in. You are one of the true Beaver believers of all time. I've seen you at more events than almost anybody I know. Love your passion and love and joy in the Beavers, and sorry that you're kind of down and you gave us bad news, as you said, about the bottom 10. I don't worry about it. You just got to go get better and build on each game and start winning games, and they're going to. I think we're going to have a different conversation here several weeks hence, but I do appreciate you calling.
They were kind of nasty. They call it the Oregon Trail State, and then they said that we had dysentery.
Well, yeah, I'm sure they were. And, you know, the bottom 10 has always been a place of mockery and derision. I used to look at it when, oftentimes, as you remember, Doug, when both schools in the state were in that. So
yeah, he even thinks he's going to go to Corvallis for the Civil War game next Saturday. So he's wrong about that too.
Whoever he is, hey Doug, good to hear from you. Thank you for the call. Let's go to Roger before we take a final break this hour on the Joe Beaver Show. Roger, good morning.
Yeah, a long time no visit. This football program right now reminds me back when we were in our 28-year slide that we would look forward to that last football game because we had something called the Orange Express to go to.
Yeah.
And then when the basketball program went down, well, then it was, well, spring's coming and baseball's here. But I want to just say a couple things about the Mariners. I mean, you know, we're kind of riding a high right now. But one of the things that concerns me is their leading batter is hitting 270-something, and that's only because he's had a tremendous second half. And Raleigh is, I would suggest that he's, I don't have any reason to think that there's any performance-enhancing things going on there. But, I mean, he's just one of the great, this is a small sample size 1 year, but he's doing things that just haven't been done before. But I want to, you guys are pretty good about accepting people that are kind of off the wall, and I have the off-the-wall suggestion. It has to do with this NIL and paying players. And just to put it in perspective, we have a quarterback, and I'd say he's probably an average quarterback in of starters in the in college football, but we're paying him more money than most of us make in 15 or 20 years, and he's gonna perform for about 6 hours during this year. I mean, if he played every snap, that's a half an hour a game times 12 hours, that's 6 hours. And then you think of, you know, we've talked on and on about the money down at Texas Tech. And so I think the answer is, and you can, you know, laugh at me after I hang up, is that Oregon State and some other blue-collar schools form an alliance of college with intercollegiate athletics to agree to not pay their players, and maybe even have a, you know, I know that, I don't know why the NCAA let us get to where we are today, but, you know, this money thing, I mean, I had a friend that threw the javelin at Southern Cal in the late 60s, and he said even back then that Mike Garrett, I mean, he'd show up the athletic department, you know, driving a Corvette or whatever it was. I mean, there's been that sort of thing going on,
forever.
For years.
Forever, yes.
But anyway, go Mariners. That's all I got.
Okay, Roger, that was kind of all over the board, but the one thing I'm glad he did bring up, because we'll be one of the, I hope maybe at the beginning of next hour, we'll be one of the two, maybe three, five, four, five radio stations in America that will talk a little Cal Raleigh and Mariners baseball when we get into the second hour. We have a guest at 12:30. I have reached out. I'm going to check my text and see if a couple of people I've reached out who have gotten back who might slide into the 12:05 slot. But a question that I do want to ask, 10 seconds, Doc?
Yeah. We got to get a break in.
Oh, a break. Yeah, we'll take the break and then we'll wrap up the hour. Okay, thank you. We'll see you next hour.
It's the Joe Beaver Radio Show. Oh, oh, oh. Coming across your radio. Oh, oh, oh. It's the Joe Beaver Radio Show. Oh, oh. Parker and Warren on the microphone. Football, baseball, basketball too. Hail, hail, hail to OSU. It's the Joe Beaver Radio Show. With Parker and Warren on the radio. It's the Joe Beaver Radio Show. Oh, oh, oh. Coming across your radio. Oh, oh. It's the Joe Beaver Radio Show. Oh, oh. Parker and Warren on the radio.
Thank you so much. That comes from a gentleman named Lee, who introduced himself at the Citizens Bank Roadshow a couple of weeks back, a studio musician. He'd done some promos for Dan Patrick, and he said he'd produced a couple of promos like that for the Joe Beaver Show. Doug Blair and Lee talk more. Lee, I think, introduced himself briefly while we, you know, everything's brief when we have these 60, we get take our headset off, we're moving in a lot of different directions.
I said hi to him.
And we said hello, and he told us a little bit about what he was up to, but he has sent us, and he has several other versions of the Joe Beaver Show as a gift to us. He's done some things for the Dan Patrick Show, Joe Beaver theme music that he kind of talked to us about at Citizens Bank. There's another version. That was kind of the old time. It sounded like a Andrews Sisters 1940s type feel there. But he's got some other types of styles with the same lyrical rendering.
Here's okay. just a quick version of number two.
Okay.
It's the Joe Beaver Radio Show. Coming across your radio. It's the Joe Beaver Radio Show. Parker and Warren on the microphone.
Well, there's a...
I've never been written into a song before.
No, there's a degree of having arrived on this planet in the universe. So somebody's going to put you in a song. Thank you so much for that. Lee, please identify yourself via our University Honda text line if you're listening. We'd love to get a cell phone from you and pick up a conversation with you a little bit about this and your other ventures and what you've contributed to the Dan Patrick Show. And some of the other versions you have, you say, for the Joe Beaver Show, we love it. We appreciate it and really are thankful for you to take the time to apply your skills and talents and artistry to this show. Thank you so much. So please text us on the University Honda text line, first, last name, maybe if you play locally, do you play local clubs, where you're going to be playing, that type of thing. We'd love to promote you here on the show and have a conversation at some point on the show. 541-497-5356.
What makes me curious when I hear this, I want to know what the small talk was in between takes from the artist saying, Joe, what is this?
Parker.
You know, there, and then he hits the button. This is a show that I listen to. Just go with it. Okay. Whatever this Joe Beaver show is.
Mike Parker. Who? Mr. Parker. Who? Gotcha. But thank you, Lee. That's good stuff. I like it.
It's
good.
Great.
Really well produced. Good music.
I'll keep that. Different and styles. My great great grandkids can say, what did great great grandpa do?
Well,
listen to this.
Thank you, Lee. Please identify yourself. Give us a little bit more background, and we'd love to further the conversation. But in the meantime, thank you for those. And thank you for those songs and for thinking of us and the show and putting us in the same category in your work as a studio musician as the estimable and great Dan Patrick. Now, Dan Patrick, I heard briefly, I think, maybe I didn't hear his whole show this morning. I heard him speak a little bit of Cal Raleigh. Maybe Ken Griffey Jr.'s name came up. I heard a call talking about Junior and Junior playing video games with kids in the Kingdome or something along those lines many hours ago this morning on this frequency.
Mm-hmm.
But at least for a moment. Now, I know we have news, and news has been reported by Bill Oram and the Oregonian that the Civil War series will continue after a one-year hiatus. That's been made official. Rob Mullins is on the record in this story, Rob the AD down the road, that the series, after a one-year hiatus, will resume after 81 straight years of playing each other this year. That will come to an end for one season. And a six-year contract for the resumption of the series has been finalized, according to Bill Oram. And the six-year will be a home-and-home beginning in Eugene in 2027.
Which would mean 4 years separated from
the last time they came here.
The last Civil War in Racer Stadium. We knew about this last week because of somebody's article saying that the two sides were talking.
Yes.
But that it wouldn't happen next year because their schedules were already filled up.
Right.
And so, not a huge surprise that they signed a deal, but that's the facts. It'll be a six-year deal.
So if you have a reaction to it, I know we've had a lot of opinion. People have shared thoughts about to play or not to play. And many of you have come in of late on the side of it. There's nothing in it for us. Let's don't do it. Well, it's on. It's on again, a six-year deal. And the college football landscape by 2032, who knows what it's going to look like then.
Yeah.
Saving College Sports, we'll get to that as we have opportunity. But a little bit more of a local feel, I do consider the Mariners that.
Well, we carry them.
And we're going to carry them tomorrow right here on this frequency as they play a matinee in Kansas City. For a long time, Cal Raleigh has tied Ken Griffey Jr., who twice hit 56 in a season. Raleigh Jr. is likely to have one more at least and become the Mariners single-season home run leader. But yesterday, he surpassed Mickey Mantle. Mm-hmm. Now, that puts him in a very special place and echelon in baseball history. You pass Mickey Mantle in a category, in the switch-hitting category specifically, when he hit his 55th, and then, for good measure, tied Jr. on the same day with his 56th. I reached out to Rob Nyer, a great baseball writer, guru, a guest on the show many times, the commissioner of the West Coast League, just texted him and asked, are you a records guy? Are you a guy that gives a lot of thought to the magnitude of certain records? We all grew up, I think, did we not, John, quizzing and each other? You know, how many home runs did Jimmy Fox hit? Well, 534.
Right.
You know, how many home runs for Babe Ruth? How many wins did Cy Young get?
Yes,
these
and
types of things.
Depending on how much you're into it, we would play the numbers game and just say a number, and then you'd have to say what that number meant.
521. Well, you got two choices there. 660. Willie. Yeah, I mean, right, the numbers game. We just throw numbers out, and people know what they...
And you got to really be dialed in for that.
No, exactly. So I'm saying to you, 56 as a switch hitter, longtime baseball fans, and Roger was one, and Roger even, and what's going on? How can you have this tremendous... I don't know how many he hit last year, but he had...
30-something.
He's been a good power hitter.
Yeah.
But behold, 56 as a switch hitter. The most home runs ever hit by a switch hitter.
And yesterday he hit two, one from each side of the plate.
Right, which is phenomenal. How phenomenal, though? What does it mean to you in your long arc as a fan and based on the callers we've had today, other than young Ben and Beaverton? Some of you have had a pretty long arc in this whole sports world, as have I. John, you not so much. But we've been around this stuff for a long time, observed a lot of things over the years in various sports, seen records come and be broken. And so anybody out there want to take this up and say, wow, that's one of the greatest things I've ever conceived of. A switch hitter is tough enough to do, but to be a switch hitter that's hit 56 in a season and surpasses Mantle, that's way up there as far as I'm concerned as a fan. Or do you just kind of, So what do you make of the record? Rob Nyer's not written back to ask, you know, to answer. He is busy in his life. But I just kind of wanted to get a feel from somebody who loves and honors the history of baseball and understands the place of switch hitters, power-hitting switch hitters. I can't think of really a lot. Eddie Murray comes to mind, along with Mickey Mantle, as prolific switch-hitting home run guys.
But was
not
Johnny
too
Bench
many
a switch
others.
Hitter?
No, Johnny wasn't a switch hitter. So I'm just curious to know how you, if you've been at this for a long time, feel about that, where the Mariners are, bigger picture, with 10 straight wins. Are you getting at all interested or excited about what they're doing? If you want to weigh in on Raleigh, I still hear a lot of argument, and Vegas still says that Aaron Judge is the favorite to win the MVP. We hear, and maybe it's provincialism, but what Raleigh's doing, if the Mariners finish this thing out and make the playoffs, win the West, or get a wild card spot, I think Raleigh deserves the MVP, and yet he right now today, according to Vegas, would not win it, that Judge is still the favorite.
I don't like that at all. He's had it, and he had a double last night, two home runs and a double. I mean, he's been just phenomenal. He's been hot all season, so consistent all summer long, and as CVB writes in, 35 from the left, 21 from the right, so fairly close to being even from both sides, and I mean, that is incredible. It's been fun because all summer long as the home runs piled up, there would be so many different records that he would tie or break, and it would seem like, well, now wait a second, have we heard that one yet? Because most by a catcher, most by a right-handed catcher, most by a left-handed catcher, most by... It's like, holy cow. But it was a couple of weeks ago where there was a tie on another record that Mantle was involved with. And it was then that it was like, okay, now you're getting serious because now you're getting big names from
if you're associated with Mantle as a switch hitter, then you're about as big as you can get.
Yeah, if someone says that ties, that breaks the record of Mickey Mantle. All right, what? Better pay attention.
That'll get some attention, and he is rightly getting a lot more. So if you want to take that up and what Bill Oram reports in the Oregonian that the Civil War series continues after a one-year hiatus, a six-year agreement will soon be officially announced. If not officially announced by both parties, it's on. Your thoughts on that? John, let's get to some text. People have been kind enough, and I know we can't probably read them all verbatim, but what do you got?
Well, the texts keep piling up, and as the show moves along, and we kind of go back and forth between different topics, then the texts get a little older. But so as we read these, just remember we have talked about these things at one point in the show today. Here's the most recent that just came in just now. Barnes should have taken the temperature of the Beaver season ticket holders before he signed on the dotted line for the Ducks series. Season ticket holders could simply forego renewing season tickets if they don't want to pay for a home home Duck game and buy individual game tickets, thus foregoing paying the premium fee. Just a few hundred season ticket holders exercising such an option would have an economic impact.
Okay.
Here's one that just came in while I was reading. Mm-hmm. Cal MVP, a sub-250 batting average,
there
probably never got an MVP.
I know, and that would be true, and that's a great text, and I was about to bring that up with Roger saying the leading hitter, I think, is Julio Rodriguez at around 270, and he's had to get really hot to get there.
Yeah.
But we're in an age and time, are we not? Who is that texter, by the way?
I don't know.
Okay. You're right. That does give me pause. What's he hitting? About 242 or thereabouts? He's been in that range all year long.
But everybody's hitting down around there.
And that's the point. I don't know what Aaron Judge is hitting from a batting average standpoint. But I get it. The low batting average gives me pause, just as when Roger won the MVP hitting 61 and 61. I think he hit 269. Anyway, what else you
Somebody named Roger. And I don't
Roger.
I don't know if that's a phone call or Roger. Yeah. This goes back to last hour, 27. Okay. We live in a world of hot takes, attention, and eyeballs. With an article titled and written the way it was, Bill Oram, I'll put the word Oram in there, was trying to get attention. Maybe not technical clickbait, but as close as it gets.
Okay, so that's somebody siding with Dave that's what that column was about. Okay.
Here's one that says, full disclosure, I'm a Duck and my dad was a Duck. However, I'm also a major Beaver believer. Is that possible? I'm married to a Beaver, two kids as well. My daughter was in the OSU marching band for 4 years. I've spent more time in Reeser than Autzen, and not once did I have negative experience. Your caller yesterday was correct. Many Duck fans these days are jerks, and they have no context of the dark ages. In my mid-60s, I know full well what the Civil War means, and I hate what is happening. For most of my life, the Civil War was our Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. Many horrible seasons, but that was still the game. It has changed, and I get the sentiment to not continue, but I am traditionalist and want it to continue. I have always rooted for the Beavers, other than the Civil War, because it was good for the state. My kids, not so much. They hate the Ducks. Love the show. Thanks. And that's from George. Okay.
George, thank you. And you say, is that possible? I think you just articulated in such a way that I would have to say, yes, it is. He's an example of that possibility. Thank you, George. That's a great text. And, you know, when Doug brings up the bottom 10, I remember years reading Steve Harvey, was it? The writer for the LA Times that invented it. And both schools, behold,
all
would
the
be there very often.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, so this is what George is saying. He lived through those years. He knows those years and times. I think it sounds like he regrets what has happened. And I hear that from other people in the Oregon world who hate it, who hate what's happened.
Yeah.
Now, they're still free to like whoever they like and support whoever they like, but they hate what's happened in driving the wedge of disparity in terms of rendering the rivalry in the kind of place that it is now, when it's meant so much to us, so many of the decades of our lives. What else you got?
CVB responds in real time and says Judge leads all Major League Baseball at 325.
Well,
only seven others are over 300.
Okay, see, now that That's a strong argument in his behalf. How many homers does Judge have? And the Yankees now, if the Yankees don't make the play, I mean, are the Yankees going to make the playoffs? Is that a given? I don't follow this in closely enough to know, but are they going to make the play? If the Mariners, for me, the linchpin could be the Mariners finishing this thing out, staying hot, making the playoffs with Raleigh as their leader and setting these ridiculous records for a catcher hitting home runs and being the catcher and the quarterback of a team.
Yeah.
So I still think Raleigh should have an edge, but 325,
yeah, that's pretty good. Pretty good.
Yeah.
Andy Mitchell says, did you say the first game of the renewed Civil War will be at Oregon in 27? Of course it is. I'm just putting a little extra on it.
Andy,
what a
yes.
joke, he says. Agree entirely with text about Barnes asking fans about the series. He keeps saying the athletes want to play. Oh, good. The kids that are here on campus for 6 months and then portal out want to play the series. The rivalry is about the fans. Should be our choice. Andy and Mitchell. That's a great text, by the way. CVB fires back. Cal favored to win Major League Baseball home run title. Okay.
How many does Judge have right now?
I don't know.
Okay.
Hi, fellas. Niles from Bell Fountain here. Calm down, everyone. Calm down, he writes. It's a no-brainer. You play the Civil War, if at all possible, because it's the Civil War. 129 years and counting. You play it for that reason alone. We're not as good as they are right now, but it's going to be okay, folks. We can handle it. Go Beavs.
Thank you, Niles. Thanks for the contribution.
Dave from Tumwater. Mad Dog Russo was insistent on First Take this morning that Cal should get the MVP, citing the history of hitters having difficulty in Safeco.
Well, that's
T-Mobile.
A great point. It's a pitcher's paradise of a ballpark.
Yeah.
And that's why it's been hard to accrue free agents there. I remember when Kevin Mitchell went there, oh, man, Mitchell's going to hit 50-52. It didn't go well for various reasons when Mitchell became a Mariner. But thank you. I feel better knowing we're in Mad Dog's coming from the East.
Yeah.
But he's looking at it, and he's a Yankee guy, and he's saying Raleigh should be the MVP.
Do you think that there is some West Coast bias, even in Major League Baseball, to look at Judge and not to look at Cal?
Probably, yeah. But I'm glad to have a voice like Russo's pounding the drum for Raleigh. That's good to hear.
Roger
Thank
wrote
you,
in to confirm that it was Roger on that last text. Dean from Albany, I don't care if UCLA and USC left the conference first. Oregon left, too, and they have blame. They have blamed, too, as much as anybody. The Ducks are probably in the top 5 to 10 richest NIL schools in the country. Mm-hmm. It does not matter if we have a great team this year, are 3-0 right now. I hope we never play them again. They're in a different conference. They left. They're dead to me. I hope they lose every single game by at least 100 points.
Now, there's the spirit. That's what, honestly, that is to me more of what I hear than the other. I hear that from Dean, and Dean, thank you. And, that comes from the heart, that comes from and the shoe on the other foot when the Beavers, there were overtures, hey, well, we kind of like what Oregon State, we'll keep you in the AAWU back when the PCC dissolved.
Right.
Oregon State didn't go along with that. Now, we're going to ride this thing out with our brother in state.
I don't think anybody's around from then.
No, I know, but
take credit or
Kip Carlson and others have it documented that was the narrative then, that the Beavers didn't go off on their own and leave their other guy
when they
behind.
Could have. Okay, yeah. Bob Keith writes in, and this could be a topic for another day. It's completely off topic. He says South Eugene cancels game against Thurston. Not enough players. Not the first cancellation in high school football this year due to lack of players. A growing trend.
It is, and I noted that in writing down and creating my chart for the football game Saturday. As distasteful sometimes as that prospect is, after the you lose a game and you're 0-3, you got to get ready for the next one and bringing the charts out and the blank canvas, so to speak, and begin. When I got to Bryce Betcher, a very good player, two-way player, that star. Two-sport star, baseball, football, Bryce Betcher, South Eugene High School, and I had remembered reading something about South's issues, and that's a real major red flag.
Well, Gladstone, same thing. They didn't play the first three games of the year because they only had 14 players in varsity.
Wow. That is something that we should take up with somebody from the OSAA.
No doubt, because I think it's all over the state.
Yeah.
Eric in Albany, my disappointment for the Beavers season thus far was amplified by my tremendous and, in retrospect, misguided positivity leading up to the season. You're not alone, by the way, Eric.
No.
I really thought the apparent talent would lead to wins and a great year, and I think they still have a chance to make a mid-late season run if the locker room isn't lost. That is a huge sentence right there. That is Bray's biggest challenge, in my opinion, he says, but it's a great example of show me before getting too high on a team. It's analogous to preseason rankings. Yeah.
Great. That's a great text. Thank you for that. And we all, you guys and Beaver, no, I'm talking about the bowl projections, Wilner, the national magazines. And Wilner had the Beavers going to the Holiday Bowl this year. You know what I'm saying, Johnny? Yeah, it's not just us. The personnel, the roster, the acquisition of a quarterback.
Yep. And watching them in August.
And a running game. And, you know, Anthony Hankerson back as a 1,000-yard rusher, a good quarterback who could distribute the ball. And Malik does do that. The Beavers are well, 3 games in, more pass completions of over. He has 6 touchdown passes, 1 shy of the whole total from last year, and more chunk plays, big plays, 20 yards and more down the field than the Beavers had last year, already through 3, if I read my note correctly.
Yeah, there are some numbers that are really good. They're overshadowed by the
other stuff.
The other stuff.
No, yeah. I got it. Now, this could be our guess, John. If it is, we will tell Lauren that we'll take a break and come back with her, if it is Lauren Rummel.
Okay, yeah.
Hold on. Let me check with you. Is it?
I think so, yeah.
Okay, we'll take a break. I will regroup here. I mentioned to Will Vaught that when Lauren's prepared, they would give us a call on the Downward Dog phone line, and I believe they have. So we'll take a break and come back with Lauren, who's on kind of a tight schedule, a practice schedule from the Oregon State volleyball team. We'll get back to your texts and calls as we go. But as we enjoyed yesterday talking women's soccer, we'll talk volleyball next with Lauren Rummel on the Joe Beaver Show on 1240 Joe Radio. We continue on the Joe Beaver Show. Mike Parker with John Warren. Yesterday, we certainly enjoyed the conversation with Carly Carraher from the women's soccer team. The volleyball team is red hot at Oregon State right now. A 5-match winning streak, 4 being sweeps. The winning streak tied for the longest in Coach Bohanic, Lindsey Bohanic's tenure, matching the 2023 team over the weekend. The 4 consecutive sweeps tying the 2008 team for the most consecutive in our 25-point rally scoring era. That's it's a little bit like the modified Stableford. I'm not quite sure exactly how things change in terms of points and scoring and reckoning, but a key player in all of that is Lauren Rummel, a senior outside hitter making her way from Tucson, where she went to high school, and then beginning her career at the University of Arizona, but transferring to the beautiful Pacific Northwest when Lindsey Bohanic was named head coach. And so it's a pleasure to welcome for the first time to the Joe Beaver Show, Lauren Rummel, who is taking time ahead of her practice today to talk about how hot this team is right now and hoping to continue it this weekend. Lauren, thanks for your time. Good afternoon. Sounds like things are pretty good in your world right now. Tell us about it.
Hey guys, thank you so much for having me. Yeah, it's a super exciting time to be a Beav, you know, just coming off of a sweep of the A6 tournament, and then we're playing Oregon tomorrow, and I think everybody's just so excited to continue this momentum that we have. The energy is insane, and it's so fun to play with these girls every day.
What's gone on, you know, from your perspective? We want to get your backstory in a moment, but to be playing as well as you are, the kind of streak you're on, what kind of things have come together for your team here of late?
Thank you. Yeah, I think we had a shift after the first couple games of the season. We just completely changed our energy and our approach to the games, and now all of a sudden we're unstoppable, and I think we're a scary team to play right now. We just have so much energy, and I think we're all excited to continue this going into tomorrow.
Lauren Rummel joining us. Lauren, when you talk about a shift or something happening, is that, you know, we're all sports teams, and we're looking at it for the Oregon State football team going forward in the weeks to come. Things can click suddenly, right? I mean, you can be in a maybe trying to figure things out mode, and when you do, look out. You kind of feel that way about your team right now.
Yes, and I think that happens. So our first game of the Boise State tournament, we played Arizona, and even though we lost in that game, we took Arizona to 4 sets, and we played so well. Even though we lost, it was a great game, and I think that was kind of the start of our momentum change. And then the next day we came out and beat UCSD, and then we haven't looked back since. So I think that was kind of the pivotal point of our energy change right there.
We're visiting with Lauren Rummel from the Oregon State volleyball team. We had a Tucson-like day yesterday here in the Mid-Valley, 90-plus degrees in mid-September, so I hope that felt like home for you. You got a practice coming up here shortly, but you did make the choice. You grew up in Tucson, went to Catalina Foothills High School there, began your career at Arizona in your hometown. Tell us a little bit, I guess, about your backstory in the sport, but then how you ended up coming to Corvallis.
Yeah, so I was actually a competitive soccer player for like 10 years growing up, and I thought I was going to go to college for soccer, and then some things changed, and all of a sudden I started playing volleyball when I was about 13, and I immediately fell in love with it, and I knew that it's something I wanted to do for a long time, and certainly grateful for the opportunity to play in my hometown, but wanted to find better opportunities elsewhere, and that's when I entered the transfer portal after my freshman year at Arizona, and when Lindsay reached out to me, I knew that I couldn't pass that opportunity up. I have a lot of family up in Oregon, and I was familiar with the area, and I knew that I wanted to continue my career here, and super grateful for Lindsay and Oregon State to give me that opportunity.
And how has the experience been? I mean, you had some familiarity, you say, with family. Maybe you could tell us a little bit more about that. Did you make trips up here as a kid, so you kind of knew the territory? But it's still a pretty big switch in terms of climate and other things that you'd experienced growing up. Has the transition been comfortable for you?
Yes. So it's funny you say that, because me and my mom actually road tripped up here a lot when I was growing up, like every summer. We would make the drive from Tucson, which is kind of a far drive, to be honest, like 24 hours.
Yes.
Yeah, so I was definitely familiar with the area. I have family in Roseburg and in Portland, so I've been up here quite a bit, and I love the climate, honestly. Like, I was getting kind of tired of the 90-degree days, and even in November in Tucson.
Right.
It's really nice to have four seasons here in Corvallis. Fall is actually my favorite season. I'm really looking forward to seeing, you know, I love seeing the leaves change color, and it's just my favorite time of year here.
What are you studying in school?
I'm studying communication.
Okay. Do you have a long-range vision and goal in mind, or are you just taking one practice, one match at a time, and you'll kind of figure that out, or do you kind of know what you want to do in your professional life?
Well, for right now, I'm kind of enjoying where my feet are. I think this is a great season so far, and I'm really excited to see where we go next. But certainly in the future, you know, I have aspirations to go into maybe the sports marketing realm, maybe working for marketing in a professional sports team, or like some sort of athletic wear company. But yeah, for right now, definitely enjoying each day as it comes.
Good.
Lauren Rummel, our guest here on the Joe Beaver Show, you're listed at 6'2". Were you always tall as you were growing through the sport, you know, as a kid and playing on the front line?
Yeah, so I've actually been this height since I was about in sixth grade. Like, I've been this height for a while. I've always been very tall, and I think that's one of the reasons why I had to stop playing soccer, because I was just, you know, heads above everybody else, and it was kind of scary. Yeah, I certainly found my home with volleyball, and I enjoy playing. So,
Lauren Rummel, the reigning WCC Offensive Player of the Week, 43 kills, just 10 errors in the three wins this past weekend. So your own game, you talk about the team. I'm just wondering, too, Lauren, kind of what's happening with you as a representative of the entire team, but your own game. Congratulations on being the Conference Player of the Week. So what's kind of kicked in for you? Is it just an understanding, aggressiveness, belief, confidence? What? I mean, for you yourself, what's been going on in your game?
Yeah, thank you. Well, I think a big part of it is the trust I have in my teammates. Like, I trust that they're going to put me in the best situations to go up and crush the ball, and I know that they have my back no matter what, so that definitely frees me up to go up and swing away, and that's my favorite thing. Being an outside hitter, I have, you know, I'm responsible for a lot, but definitely my favorite part of the job is crushing balls, so yeah, I've been enjoying that for sure.
Final thing, I know you have practice coming. We appreciate you making time for us on the Joe Beaver Show. Tomorrow, Oregon at Gill Coliseum at 6 o'clock. I mean, we've got a Civil War football rivalry game coming up down the road in football. It's a much-discussed subject in our world. I'm just wondering, when it comes to any kind of matchup with that team, that program from down the road, do you feel in your locker room and as you're preparing a real sense of anticipation and excitement, and how much can the fans help you tomorrow night at Gill?
Yeah, this week has been feeling different for sure. We just have a different kind of energy going into preparing for a game against Oregon. we're full of energy and anticipation. And, you know, it's known as Hate Week here. Like, we want to win. We want this rivalry to be ours. And I think we're making the preparations to make that happen. And we're just so excited. I think we're going to have a good crowd here tomorrow night, which we're super pumped for. Like, we love playing in Gill. We love playing in front of our fans. And we're really, really excited. We've been waiting for this moment for a while. So, yeah.
Good for you. Lauren, congratulations on your individual honor, but it's all part of how well and how hot the team's playing. We hope you keep that going tomorrow night against Oregon at Gill at 6. Congratulations on the individual honor. Thank you for making time for us this week and today on the Joe Beaver Show, and I hope we can do it again. Thank you, Lauren.
Yes, thank you so much for having me.
Lauren Rummel, our guest, senior outside hitter. Hate Week here. No, come on. You know what? I'm kind of glad to hear that, to be honest with you, because that's, you know, it's not as though, I know Tom Lehrer, the professor, wrote a very funny song many years ago, the late, great Tom Lehrer, National Brotherhood Week. It's pretty funny. It's a funny song, as most of his were. And he says, you know, it's National Brotherhood Week. We got to like this guy. We got to like that guy. And everybody's got to like everybody. But then we can go back to our usual hatreds the following week. But this week, no, it's National Brotherhood Week. In a sense, to hear that, does Lauren Rummel hate the competitors?
like Dean from Albany?
Yeah. Dean does hate. And Dean and Eugene, Dean in Albany, who I mean, I think we heard from both. I mean, I think there could indeed be genuine hatred. But when I hear her say this is Hate Week around here, go, man, go.
I agree. And honestly, this earlier this week, Jerry Mixon Jr. was asked.
Yeah, how
says,
about that? Go,
he
man.
He says, it's a big rivalry game, he said, following Tuesday's practice. Everybody pop out in Oregon. And just from being here, there are little bros, and we got to go out there and kick their, he says the word, rear ends. I love that. Yeah, and so does a couple Beavers that were interviewed. It's like, okay.
Yeah, and that's the way kind of you got to get that spirit going. And even Lauren said, you feel something different this week. So here we go. The closer we get, right? I don't know. I know that it's been a little harder and quieter and all of that. It's a little quieter on the northern front because of the way things have been going here as we get ready to head south for a north-south game, part of the reason why the thing's has been called the Civil War, and a lot of it feels like we're moving into just that kind of usage again, even though it's still called the rivalry game, officially the 129th, whether that changes when an announcement is made for 2027 and the official release and all of that from both schools about the continuation of the series. But whatever the case, I'm kind of glad to hear that kind of spirit going on in the Oregon State volleyball locker room and practices. Hate Week as we get ready for that rivalry match tomorrow night at Gill Coliseum at 6:00. Richard Siegler back in the day talking about now, you know, he said, I know that their fans, they think they're fans of Oregon, but deep down, really, they want to be fans of the Beavers, and we welcome them in, or we're going to go, I think you said about the Huskies once, we're going to go rub, they've had their faces in the dirt, and we're going to rub their faces in the dirt even more. Yeah, that didn't sit well with Dennis, because, you know, he was an old school coach and didn't want to put bulletin board material up. But you go with any kind of motivation you can, and if Jerry Mixon, an outstanding linebacker for that team, along with Bryce Betcher, the two inside guys, are really good, but that thing's got to be printed in bold letters about Mixon calling them little brothers and, you know, go, use it, let it be fuel, and get fired up, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's take a break. We'll wrap up the show next with texts and any calls you might have. 541-497-5356 on the Joe Beaver Show. We always
I'll
get
tell you
those
how that
updated
came down.
Promos because I like the fact that that promo, and Gary Hill's one of the hardest working people I've ever known. He does a great job. He's been a guest on the show, and maybe we'll try to reach out to him next week.
Keep going because you're giving him all the credit. Keep going.
I like him.
Yeah.
But I want to hear you. If there's any credit to be taken, it's important to apply it, Johnny. I get it. You made that?
Yes.
So it wasn't Hill supplying.
No, and I'll tell you how I did it.
Okay, you did a great job.
This is how creativity works, right?
Yes.
They send what are called topicals for the entire month. They go in a studio and they just sit there and they read a script. hey, and it's no music or anything.
They it do says, it for the
hey,
whole year.
Yeah, but all he read right there, if you listen to it, was, hey, it's Gary Hill. Don't join us for game two of the series because it's generic enough. You can do it a month ahead of time.
It sounded custom made with his call. Because home run
I took Raleigh's call from last night and matched it up against the topical and then put the music under it, and then I tagged it at the end.
That's great work, Johnny.
Well, so, and it's something I wish I could do every day, I can, but I can't because I don't have time.
Exactly.
So I did today and yesterday.
That
and
sounded
I put it
really
in there.
Good, and the Mariners thus today, and then tomorrow they'll be on during this time slot.
Right.
We will give the airwaves over to the Mariners in Kansas City. The Mariners red hot, 10 straight wins. I think their longest win streak, I think Sydney pointed out, maybe from a couple of years ago, Sydney Pointer, MLBs.com, huge Mariners fans as well, a fan as well. The longest streak in team program. Here we have college. Here you're a bunch of college guys. Yeah. The longest streak in franchise history, 15 in the 116-win season in 2001. But tomorrow, the Mariners, Friday, again, a reminder, we won't be able to remind as much tomorrow, so we hope you'll make a note of it now. And come join us Friday at Tim Uwis's offices, the parking lot actually across the street from his office, in the parking lot kind of heading south of his office in downtown Corvallis towards the basketball courts and the skate park and the confluence of Mary's and the Willamette. Anyway, we'll be in that parking lot, 545 2nd Street, downtown. Tim Uwis flipping burgers, hot dogs, all the trimmings for a great lunch, and a lot of prizes to give away 11-1 on Friday.
And fellowship, no doubt. Yeah. That's what we do it for. CVB is very active. The rivalry will be over when, like Merrill, interest is down to what any ranked team matchup would engender. When matching up with any other power team is equal, the Ucks have long been my favorite team to beat. That is dwindling away. Dave and Sandy says, as I'm out in the woods cutting down trees, listening, I'm not overly excited about the Oregon championship game being extended. The best would be a 6-0 record against the Quacks and wait for them to beg to come back to the Pack. Great show, okay. Dave and Sandy.
Thank
Thanks,
you, Dave.
Dean and Eugene. This is Dean from Eugene, and I hate the Ducks. Yeah, we know we were having
is that
a,
the
a
end
good
of the
laugh.
Text?
That's it. Yeah, that's
okay,
it.
Okay, thank you, Dean.
Okay, hooray
for
Mike.
Reminder.
Tom in Corvallis. Hooray for Mike mentioning Tom Lehrer, quote-unquote, old guys.
Well, Lehrer, whom we lost a few weeks ago, I've loved him since I was in high school, and I have three of his records, and I play them. Lehrer is one of the guys I turn to when down, as I turn to the Marx Brothers and Fields. If I'm really down, I'm going to watch a routine by Fields or the Marx Brothers or some of the Professor Tom Lehrer, and he always makes me laugh. What else you got?
Here's one that came in. I didn't see it. You might want to mention to Lauren that Lauren was a gold medalist this summer representing USA Volleyball.
Well,
didn't know that.
We missed that. Wish we would have had it. We'll talk to her again, I hope. Go cheer her on tomorrow at Gill if you can.
Sydney Pointer, the author of MLBeeves.com, reminds us to wear orange in Gill tomorrow for the volleyball.
Thank you.
Here's another one. How valuable can Judge be if his team misses the playoffs? Raleigh is the best defender in the league, in all caps. He has the platinum glove to prove it.
Well, again, another strong argument. The fact that Russo's a New York guy banging the drum for Cal is a good thing, and he's not banging it slowly. With apologies to Mark Harris, he's banging it loudly on his national platform on behalf of Raleigh, the toughest position on the field, the best at it, the best hitter at that position in history in terms of at least home runs. Now, the batting average, Campy, Bench, others have him there, Mickey Cochran. But I think he should, particularly if the Yankees don't make the play. And I don't know where the Yankees are in the playoff hunt. I'm not following it closely enough. We can check that out. Sydney, if you know, let us know. Anyway, what else you got?
Here's a listener with a question that I'm not sure of the answer, because I have YouTube TV, and as part of what I have, I don't think I paid extra for it, is the Big Ten Network. But this questioner is asking about having the Big Ten TV channel on my set, but I thought you had to subscribe to it to see the Ducks Beavers game. I know it's not on the CW channel. However, when I went to the guide to record the Big Ten game, it said for all TVs. I'm not really crazy about watching the game, especially now with the Ducks. I always listen to mic and then pop into TV occasionally. I think a lot of people do that. So I'm not sure about that. I will do some looking in on that. Now, this one was in September. This was yesterday. This was posted last night, and it's a link to the title of the text is Bizzana's season is over.
Right.
And there's a link to the story on CBSSports.com, so I haven't seen that story yet.
Casey Stengel once said, I'll never make the mistake of turning 70 again, when it was purported that he was losing touch with the game, that he was too old to do the job, and all he had done was win five straight World Series championships and then cooled off a little, lost to the Yankees, didn't win it in 54, lost to the Dodgers in 55, won it in 56, lost it in 57, won it in 58, didn't go in 59, and in 60 went and lost to the Pirates in 7 and gets fired. He's 70. Casey, I'll never make the mistake of turning 70 again. I worry that Travis Bizzana, the very day we had him on the Joe Beaver Show, I hope he's not, I'll never make the mistake of going on the Joe Beaver Show again, because that very day, almost like when we had Nick Madrigal on.
What happened to him that very day?
He aggravated the oblique that we had talked something. Remember, we talked to him about
it. Yeah, we did.
Now, I don't think Travis, who's such a serious student of the game and worker, will blame going on the Joe Beaver Show for the oblique injury being aggravated. But in his own mind, I fear that it could be slightly juxtaposed. And I hope not give him any pause to join us again down the road. But the prudent thing, the best thing, shut him down, and they have, and let him be completely pain-free and healthy going into spring training next year and make the big club out of spring training. I think there's a great shot at that.
Oh, yeah.
So,
I thought he was going to make it this fall.
I thought he might have a shot to get called up. Let's go to Paul on the Downward Dog phone line as we head down the stretch of today's show. No show tomorrow, Friday, at Tim Uwis's offices or parking lot across from his office. Hope to see you there, Paul. Paul, good afternoon.
Oh, yeah, I will be there, Mike. Good. Hey, it's just, I read that story about Bizzana there, and it wasn't the same oblique that he tweaked the second time. It was a different one.
Okay.
Oh, that's terrible.
That's not good. He's going to have to do whatever he does. He's so strong and so tight. You know, I mean, he's just such a highly conditioned athlete that in his training and rehab and all of that, I'm sure he's going to have people that will work with him to kind of eat, whether it's more flexibility or whatever it else he needs to have there. I think he'll be in a much better spot next spring.
Yeah, well, and it sounded like it wasn't as bad as the first one either. It was just a discomfort.
Okay.
But anyway, to get to Cal Raleigh, I can't watch the Mariners because they took Root Sports off of the Xfinity. You know, they've been trying to make us pay for it.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, and then I can't listen to my radio because my hearing aids, you know, I get feedback. So I have to take my hearing aids off to put my radio on. But I have been doing that lately because I want to hear his home runs, you know. And I heard him last night, you know. I mean, and the Kansas City crowd was cheering for him when he hit him.
That's nice. That's nice.
I think that's going to happen everywhere. I bet you they cheer for him in Houston when he hits a home run, just because he's in the same, the West, you know, American League West. They're going to cheer for their players. I don't care if they're, you know, they're losing or winning.
Well, I'm not so sure about that one. I can see the Kansas City fans, you know, having the sort of the luxury and liberty to do that and cheer for the other guy, and that's good to know. But the battle that the Mariners are in with Houston, they may be a little less enthusiastic in their clapping.
Well, a true baseball fan is going to cheer for the player. It's not going to have anything to do with the team. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I kind of know what you mean. I know what you mean, yes. But we'll see.
We will. I'm driving now, so I hope I don't lose you. But we'll see you guys Friday.
Okay, great. Thanks for the call, Paul. Okay, anybody else on the text line weighing in on the season that Raleigh's having, and how much do you look askance at it when you see a batting average under 250? Or do you, in this day and age, come on, that what he does as a catcher, as a leader, smashing home run records, etc., or does that give you pause when it comes to him being an MVP? It did one of our texters. Does it you? 541-497 53-56.
Okay. I was just dealing with the particular post here.
Yeah.
Yankees 5 games back of the division lead, but they hold the top wild card.
Is that
spot.
Sydney? Or
no.
Who? Okay.
I don't know who that is. Okay. Oh, yeah, that is Sydney.
Okay, so say it again. They're 5 back of say again.
5 back of the division lead, mm-hmm. but they hold the top wild card spot.
Okay. So Judge is going to make the playoffs.
Yeah.
Likely.
CVB writes in and says, Judge doesn't catch. Again, Judge right. doesn't catch.
No, I...
As in, Charlie don't surf. Voice and intonation. I don't know what that means.
Well, I do, and it's in one of the great scenes in the history of motion pictures, right?
What's
CVB?
That? Oh, do regale us.
Colonel Kilgore in Apocalypse Now.
Oh.
Trying to, you know, you either fight or surf. Which is it going to be? I mean, Kilgore Duvall... In that scene,
yeah,
makes the entire movie. His role in Apocalypse Now, it's worth watching all of Apocalypse Now to have the, however, 15 or 20 minutes that Duvall's in the motion picture. He is so good in that scene, and so thank you. Yeah, Charlie, don't catch. Thank you for that paraphrase. What else you got, Johnny?
From the We're All in This Together department, the three schools who have a beaver as their mascot, OSU, Bemidji State, and Minot State, are a combined 0-9. Go All Beavs. That's funny.
Okay. And did somebody say yesterday the three schools that the Oregon State Beavers have played are a combined 15-1?
Yes.
Did you? I mean, is that accurate?
That's okay. Right. Okay. That's right. Okay, those were up above,
15-1,
below.
16 games. That can't be right.
From yesterday.
That can't be right, though. They haven't all played enough games yet to be 15-1. Anyway, well,
to clarify, from yesterday in Brooks' call, I totally agree to not call out players, and I'm not suggesting that from Bray. What I am suggesting is to help us, the fans, help you, Bray. The same generic answers from a nervous-looking coach doesn't help me defend him to the general public. To give an example, I love Coach Tinkle's interviews. He's transparent, has fire in his belly with passion, and gives specific answers that are well tailored to the situation and game at hand. Whether fans like him or not, I feel like he has a passion, vision, and direction for the program. Trent may have that too, but it doesn't come across to the public that way, which may be unnecessarily handicap his work. Go Coach Bray. Go Beavs. That's... Mike from Tigard. That's
Mike, good. Thank you. Yeah, and Wayne is very good in those settings. There's no question. But being good in those settings, even though I think we would all like, you know, would you like a coach that's good with the media and good in settings and or not? Well, yeah, of course you'd say yes. I never felt, and I think others shared this perspective yesterday, Jonathan Smith, that wasn't necessarily his strong suit, you know, being a charismatic figure in the media and giving these really detailed and thoughtful answers. He was good. He was fine. He was professional. But, you know, it wasn't something that necessarily of...
Trent gives
it's
short,
not as important
generic
in the long
answers.
Run. To me, it's not... I think what people are saying... I got to take it, Doc. I got to take it.
Okay.
So wrap up the show, and tomorrow this is...
Okay, I think I can do it.
He gives, you know, somewhat short, generic answers.
Yes.
To be good in that space right now when you're struggling, I think is maybe a little more important is what...
I'll get one more in here. Two birds, one stone. Get a beaver costume for the dog to lead the team out. Newport Beach Tony. Actually, this was from yesterday. We were talking to Dogtown Mike, and someone had suggested he teach a dog or train a dog how to go get the tea. And Dogtown Mike said he has one. So propose that. I think that's a great idea. We've got Mariner baseball on tomorrow morning, so we won't get a chance to tell you more about Tim Uwis and that remote that we're going to do on Friday. But Tim Uwis, his Edward Jones offices, 545 2nd Street in downtown Corvallis on Friday.